Dave Meltzer here with another episode of The Playbook. I sat down with Chris Gardner, author of the book The Pursuit of Happiness, my favorite movie. Chris dove deep and shared his ideas about why happiness should be spelled with a Y, how a conversation with Maya Angelou shaped his view of success, and why you should always strive for your plan A. Stay tuned for all of that and more, only on The Playbook.
This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host and CEO of Sports One Marketing, David Meltzer.
This is Dave Meltzer, CEO of Sports One Marketing with Entrepreneur The Playbook, and I am here with more than a mentor, it's a friend, but someone I've looked up to, Chris Gardner. Now, I know that may or may not be a household name, but it is for me.
Depends on the country you're at.
Exactly.
But go ahead.
For those people that aren't blessed and know of you or what that name means, give us a little bit of background.
I don't talk to those people.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Well, you know, when I started my speaking career, my brand was Dave Meltzer, top inspirational speaker you've never heard of.
But you manifested it.
That's right,
man. Okay, all right. I am a parent. I am an author. I am a grandparent who's also done some very interesting things in his life.
Yes, you have.
And they've all happened here in San Francisco and the Bay Area. And that's why it's so cool to be here. And I'm glad to be here with you today.
I'm really glad. Well, let's talk about some of those interesting things. And I'm going to tell a story, and this is where it came, is Chris and I were working on a deal to purchase an NBA team. Mm-hmm. And that's how we met. Mm-hmm. And people told me, oh, you have to meet Chris Gardner. He's an amazing guy. He's in the financial business. This is all they told me. They're big real estate money guys. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you two together could do anything, Dave. Mm-hmm. So I meet
you. And almost did it.
Yeah, almost. Just got a little out of it, but everything happens for a reason. And then at that time, I wrote my first book. Mm-hmm. You were just so kind. You said, oh, you wrote a book. Would you send it to me? So I sent out my book, and then it meant the world to me that in front of everyone on the conference call, you're like, Dave, I read your book, and wow, you were so. So then someone on the call said, oh, you know, Chris wrote a book too. I said, what? I said, I've known him for 3 months now. He hasn't said one word. All he's been is complimenting to me. So you said, Dave, I'll send you my book. I said, no, I'll buy it on Amazon. He said, no, I'll send it. So tell everyone what came in the mail to me, Mr. Radical Humility. Tell everyone.
Well, first of all, let me tell you this. Honestly, that book that you received is currently being translated into Arabic for the very first time. And when that's done, that will be 44 languages that were published in, including 6 dialects of Chinese. And the coolest thing in the world, when this happens for you, I'm in Hawaii one day. We're walking down the beach, going for a walk. And just before I hit the beach, I hear someone laughing. And I look up, and there's a guy sitting over there. He's reading a copy of my book published in Korean. Is that crazy?
That is crazy, man, right?
And I don't know Korean. I can't read Korean, but I recognize the characters. I know all of the covers. I can identify them. But my point to you is this. I'll never forget talking with Dr. Maya Angelou, who was one of my heroes, before the release of my first book, The Pursuit of Happiness, came out. And I said to her, man, I want to get to the New York Times bestsellers list. I want to get to number one before Oprah, before Will Smith, before anybody else says anything. I want to get there. What she said to me, David, was the most important thing. What she said was, that's not where your focus should be. Your focus should be on the fact that people have connected with your work and you're helping to change people's lives. When you do those things, all this other stuff will come. Sure enough, the next month, I get a case of books from the publishers. There were some words on the cover that weren't there before. Number one, New York Times bestseller. Huh? So that's cool, man. That's cool. You have to manifest it.
You do. And I'll tell you, I've witnessed that myself. I was shadowed by a young man out of Boston that took his own dollar, flew out to just follow me around so I could mentor him. And I said to him, he said, well, you've made the most impact on my life except for one person. And we're driving in the back of the car to the World Series, I think. And he said, Chris Gardner. He said, I heard I was a correctional facility officer, and I heard Chris Gardner. And so I said, really? You mean from The Pursuit of Happiness,
well,
the
Will Smith. Called me with
and
that
I
guy.
Called.
Yeah, I remember that.
And
yeah.
This is what was cool. You weren't having a good day, which is rare.
That
but
you,
it was a challenging day. And you said to me, I know he talked to you. He was crying, you know, and you got back on the phone and you lived what you, Maya Angelou told you, right? What's important is
connecting with
the, and impacting their lives.
Yes,
and you and this guy told you that you changed his life and you said that turned my whole day around. And I felt like, wow, that was probably the nicest gift I could ever give Chris.
Let me tell you something, man. That happens every day. And it's humbling.
Yeah.
It's humbling, David. I mean, you and I both travel a lot. I did this one thing last year. I closed the year off strong. I did 11 countries in 18 days. Now, and I'll never try to do that again, right? But to go, for instance, to Vietnam, and to go for the very first time to Saudi Arabia, Colombo, Sri Lanka, Bangkok, Thailand, and all around the world. You meet people every day who share with you how you've influenced them. And I'll say this to you in all sincerity, man, probably the most humbling thing that can happen is for someone to say to you, you're the reason that I didn't quit.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I'll never forget, man. I'm in, okay, having a bad day? You want to have a bad day? Have a bad day at the airport. Right? That's a bad day.
Because
everybody's having a bad day at the same time.
Right.
Something happened, okay?
Right. It's a collective.
It's all, it's been, right? I missed a plane, and I go through this thing. Okay, the thing that we all go through. I got to get there. This is a problem. This is an issue. This shouldn't happen. Blah, 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 blah. And I'm going through all this stuff, and a young man came over to me, and he says to me, I have to share with you that you're the reason I don't quit. He shares with me, my wife died, and she left me with these two little girls, twins. And there are days when I get up in the morning that I just don't know, but I don't quit. That's humbling, man. So that's a powerful thing.
So, you know, I'm entering into my own, right? Owning it. So one of the things that we talked about early in our relationship, you know, when I was starting to, you got to own it, Dave. And do you ever feel, you know, I had an interesting thing this morning. Someone called me that wanted to quit, like on life. And those are serious phone calls that you're driving in. But I get to the point where I feel like, wow, am I a fraud? You know, do you ever feel that way when someone, you know, they're gushing over you, right? And it happens every day to you. I know it does because it's happened more and more to me. And it happens to you. And they're like, you changed my life. You're incredible. The guy flew in from ESPN, from China, you know, the Chinese ESPN guy. He came in a day early, sat at the back of the plane so he could have, you know, 20 minutes with me. And I'm sitting there going, this can't be real. Like, I'm just a person. Do you ever feel like a fraud? Because I fight that sometimes.
No, I never have that feeling, man. I've learned to appreciate what people share with me because a couple of things. Keep in mind, number one, that one person that you ran into that moment, you ran into them at that moment in their time, in their lives for a reason that you have no knowledge or control over. I was supposed to meet that guy in New York when I missed that plane. I was supposed to be there, right? And I'm glad that I was. And one of the things that I'm always mindful of is appreciate it. And I saw someone who I will not mention their name. It doesn't matter who it is. But big, big Hollywood to-do, right? And I'll never forget the way this guy carried himself. And I remember thinking to myself, wait a minute. That's exactly how you never want to come off. And I will say this, man, probably one of the biggest movie stars in the world to this day still, Will Smith. Will is the most humble, cool, kind, honest, sincere person that you're ever going to meet. And he's like that every day.
Awesome.
Now, does he have moments in time? Yeah, but some of the things he shared with me, honestly, from the very beginning was, when you run into people like that, you got to appreciate that, and you got to know that's probably the one time you're ever going to see that person. And you never want anyone to walk away disappointed, yeah. Right? So it takes a lot of energy, honestly, because you got to be on at all times. You got to be on, right? But that also means that you learn to appreciate your downtime. And when you get that few minutes to yourself to do nothing, talk to no one, be quiet. We were talking earlier with one of your guys about my favorite place in the world.
Yeah.
It's my couch, man.
That's beautiful.
And it's nothing fancy. It's just this great big piece of leather, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't talk. It doesn't want anything. And it's just right here when I come home.
That's
awesome. So, hey, Chris, welcome home. All right? So you learn how to appreciate moments like that.
Well, I'm going to take you back a little bit because you are known for persistence. And I believe, you know, my new tagline is, I believe you can make a difference in your life if you have a consistent, everyday, persistent, without quit, enjoyment of the pursuit of your potential. And when I came up with it, obviously it resonated with your life. And there was a saying when I originally watched the movie, and I didn't know you at the time, and it was before that I went through my own bankruptcy, my own bottom that I hit. It was, you know, life gives me, you can look at it as a setback or is it a setup? And when I watched the movie and then when I read your book and I got to, you're a setup guy. You know, everything is that, this is just setting me up for something bigger and greater. I live in a world that's way too big for this.
Oh, man, man.
Can you tell me where that came from?
Well, you know what? First of all, let me say this about that. It's interesting you should mention that. I, like yourself, have some core things that I believe in. And that idea that you just shared with me. People talk to me a lot of times about hope. And hope's a beautiful thing, but I have to always ask people, well, what's the nutritional value of hope? Right? What's, you're going to tell your children we got hope for dinner, right? Again. Right? Hope's a beautiful thing, but it's always more important, David, to have a plan. And not just a plan, but plan A. What is plan A? And the best plan A's always have something I call the C5 complex. Your plan A has got to be clear, concise, compelling, consistent, and committed. You've got to have plan A. And you have to always be mindful, and I say this in all sincerity, plan B sucks. It does.
It's a survival.
I mean, you think about some of the biggest names in their respective industries and worlds. Those people were committed to plan A. I mean, I know you're a big NBA fan, as I am. Michael Jordan's got 6 NBA championship rings because he was committed to plan A, not plan B. Oprah Winfrey became the queen of all media because she was committed to plan A, not plan B. Whatever your politics are, Barack Obama served 2 terms as president of the United States because he was committed to plan A, not plan B.
Yep.
Plan B sucks, man, yep. Right? And something else you said earlier that makes me think of something that I share with people is this whole thing about owning it.
Yeah.
I have to explain to people all around the world, why do you spell happiness with a why? That why is there to make us all mindful that it is you and your responsibility, you and your opportunity to create the life that you want for you and your family. That's why we spell happiness with a why. We are right now in San Francisco, downtown San Francisco, less than 15 minutes away from the last train station that my son and I had to sleep in Oakland, California. And there was a highly polished piece of sheet metal over the sink in the bathroom. It wasn't a mirror, but it served as a mirror.
Right.
And I had to wash my little boy up every day and ask myself some real hard questions. Why did this happen? Why did that happen? What's going to happen next? But the biggest question every day, David, was, how did I get here? And the answer was brutal. The answer was, I drove here. I had something to do with it.
Kind of.
Right? Right? Yeah. But that was that moment where you say, whoa, well, if I drove here, then I can drive out of here. You can't change something until you own it.
Yeah.
I drove here. And there's something very empowering about that. Something very liberating about it. So, man, I have to say this to you in all sincerity. We are also, like, right here downtown San Francisco in the financial district.
Yeah.
Remember the scene in the movie where I meet the guy in the red Ferrari? Right? And I go up to him and I say, I got to ask you two questions. What do you do? How do you do that? We shot that scene and that moment in my life right across the street at the Pacific Coast Stock Exchange. We're one block away from where the scene where Will Smith comes down the stairs. He's got the job, right? This little moment in my life is called happiness. We're one block away, 555 California Street. So when I come to San Francisco, man, it's kind of an emotional thing.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and I thought that I was through a lot of it. And people ask me a lot of times, well, when you see the movie, man, when I see that movie, every time I see any piece of it, David, it's a different film for me because I can see it in 3D. You see the moment the director tried to capture that day, that moment, I could see everything else that happened that day that's not in the film. So it's a different experience.
I bet.
Yeah.
Now, I noticed one thing. You wear two watches.
Yes, sir.
Why is that?
Because I'm paranoid, man. I got to be on time. I got this thing about time. I was late once for a huge meeting. As a matter of fact, my very first day in business on my own, October 19th, 1987. The day the stock market crashed 508 points. That was not a good time to be trying to raise money. Right? I showed up for the last meeting with the guy who could have made everything happen 20 minutes late. And he explained to me, he said, son, if I cannot expect you to be on time, I cannot expect you to do timely things with my money. No, thank you.
Wow.
That was 30 years ago, man. I've worn two watches since. I'm never late. I like to be early. When you come in late, man, you're already backpedaling. Right. You're already backpedaling. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, the weather. Oh, the traffic. Oh, my God.
Right.
I like to be aggressively early.
I'm with you. No, a lot of what you're talking about, and my mom shared this accountability rule with me. You know, we had six kids, single mom, and she would say, you're living below the line. So the whole, it's late. So in my life, it's, if you blame somebody else, if you were shameful about anything, blame, shame, and if you justified. To my mom, there's no justification for anything in your life other than what did I do to attract it to myself and what am I supposed to learn from it? Those are two. So when you're telling me about the scene in the sink, for me, it was lying in bed, right, knowing what got me to the place. Like, I had so much. I never had to work again in my 30s, right? And I remember lying there. So my wife always says, you only spent one day being depressed. You know, when it hit the fan, you spent one day. And I sat there, and it came to the point where I said, gosh, if I can look up, I can get up. And I'm accountable. I just said, you know what? I'm tired of blaming the guys for the lawsuit, the no financing, you know, not letting me borrow against my properties. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know what? I did this, right? And like you said, I own that. And to this day, ironically, I think that built my career, that I walk off a stage and people say, thank you for the courage to tell the truth.
Well, more important than having built your career, it built you.
Good point. Yeah, and built you.
Yeah.
I have an interesting question I just thought of. You know, you have a son and one granddaughter, and you were told that's the only granddaughter you're getting, which I thought was great. You know, what does your son remember about the experience, and what do you think he's
You know what's interesting about that is two things. Number one, the only people who read the book know that in the film, Jaden Smith plays my son as a five-year-old. They did it for the dialogue.
Right.
At this point in our lives, my son was 14 months old. He doesn't remember any of this, okay? He doesn't remember any of this. And my position was, he didn't have to, right? He did not know that some of the times he ate and I didn't, it wasn't because I wasn't hungry. He didn't need to know that. He did not know that some of the times we both eat and got a hotel room that was only made possible because I had just sold blood. He didn't need to know that. And I say he did not need to know that because that's what fathers do. And the truth of the matter is sometimes the best father is a good mama. You just mentioned your mom.
Yeah.
Single parent?
Yeah.
Six kids?
Yeah.
Sometimes the best father is a good mama.
Yeah.
And you know what? Let me tell you something, man. Oh, man, my mom moved to heaven 23 years ago. We still talk every day.
I get that.
Well, we talk every day, and we're having the same conversation. Son, did you do your work? Yes, ma'am. Did you pray on it? Yes, ma'am. Well, keep working because God's busy. God got to go help somebody else need something more than you. Right. There's somebody that needs more help than you. You just keep working. God's busy. Yeah. He'll get to you when he can.
Nice.
Right?
I love that.
And you know, it's interesting. I mean, we probably could sit here and have a long, long conversation about our mothers. And I would submit to you, I believe there's a secret school that all mothers go to that makes them all the same person. Don't matter what religion, color, any place on the planet, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we've all heard our moms say something about water, something about this thing about water. Don't burn that bridge. You might have to come back that way,
yeah.
Right? You can lead a horse to water. You can't make him drink.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We've all heard mom say that.
Yeah.
Something about water. And I'm trying to, what the hell is that? What's up with all that?
That's awesome, man. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but I think the most powerful position in the world in, you know, is being a mom.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you're a man or a woman, right, there's something about, I consider a caretaker.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. There's hunters and gatherers, and there's the caretakers.
Mm.
And I, you know, there's something about nurturing. My mom raised six kids and empowered us. You know, I just said earlier to someone, because they were so impressed, my siblings are all these unbelievable people that went to the Ivy Leagues, and they're just amazed that my family with a single mom could, you know, have all these achieving young people. I said, all she did was two things. One, she woke us all up early because she didn't want any trouble. So she woke us all up at 5 o'clock. By nighttime, there was no trouble because we were passed out. Right? And then she became a third degree black belt in what good mothers are good at. It's a third degree black belt in the martial art of Jewish guilt.
Mm.
Could be Catholic guilt, whatever kind of guilt.
Whatever.
But a good mom knows how. You don't hit your child, you guilt them. Mm. It's way more painful.
Mm.
Last question, because I know your time's so valuable. We appreciate you.
I'm good.
But, you know, with everything that you've achieved and you're living a fulfilled, purposeful, happy with a why life, what legacy do you want to leave?
You know, that's a good question, because I am right now, we are very clearly, to me, I'm at what I've come to call the JFK moment in my life. I'm a little older than you. I'll never forget hearing President John F. Kennedy ask that question in his inauguration address: ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. I'm very concerned about some things that I see happening in our country right now. I'm very concerned about the future. And as a result of that, I'm going back to high school.
Good.
I'm going back to high school. I'm going to be speaking at 100 high schools all across the country. Talking to young people about the three most important decisions that I ever made in my life, all of which I made at their age or younger. And I've got to tell you, man, I've done this a couple of times in very, very diverse communities, from as far as Fitchburg, Massachusetts, down to Atlanta, Georgia. And the interesting thing is I've gotten the same question, first question: is the American dream still possible? Now, this is coming from 16, 17-year-old kids,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you exactly why they're asking that question. They're asking that question because they're concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And they've seen how some things did not work out for their big brothers and sisters like they thought they would have. The film, The Pursuit of Happiness, David, it came out at the exact perfect time. Christmas 2006. January 2007, economists started asking, is the U.S. economy going into a recession? Spring of 2008 is the beginning of the global financial crises. All those young people who went away to college in 2008 saying, yes, we can, they came out in 2012 saying, what the?
Right.
Whoa, I did everything I was told. I went to school. I worked hard. I played by the rules. Now I've graduated. The business that I want to be in or the industry I hoped to work in has changed forever. I've got $100,000 in student loan debt. I got to move back in the house with mom and dad if they haven't lost the house. And their little brothers and sisters who are currently in high school, they were watching this. And they have seen that, you know what? That didn't work out for my big brother like he thought it was going to. So I've got to make some different decisions. And one of the things that I share with these young people in this talk is not only is the American dream still real, it's gone global. Meaning you have got to understand that because of technology and globalization, the people that you're competing with ultimately, they are not in your school. They're not in this city. They probably are not even in this country. Because of globalization and technology, the people you're competing with are all over the world. And while you are being young and enjoying yourself as you are within your right to do, know this. While you're off being young, your competitors right now are grinding. They're studying. They're practicing. They're rehearsing. They're networking. And that's going to make the difference between who signs the front of the check and who signs the back of the check.
I appreciate your time. We'll do this more often. This is Dave Meltzer with entrepreneur Chris Gardner, The Playbook.
Thanks for listening, and remember to tune in every Tuesday for the latest interview only on The Playbook.